Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Good morning, David Doval. How are you?
Good, my friend.
Everything good?
All's well.
Good deal. Missed you last week. Glad you had a good weekend.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Sorry you did it when you didn't feel well.
Nah, it's all good. We're taking calls this morning, though. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. And look, we could run down a bunch of stuff that we're going to talk about. But before we do that, we've already got James waiting. So I say, let's talk to James. Good morning, James. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, guys. I have a question about coating a deck. I have a deck probably 6 months old. It's time to put a paint stain on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd like to find if there's a product there that I could use to stain it with paint stain so I don't have to strip it if I have to put another coat on it later. It's a huge deck, and that's a lot of work to strip it.
Yeah.
I think the Cabot's, and I'm not sure if it's all of the Cabot stains or just the solid color, but I know that the solid is I think it says on it that you don't have to strip it.
Okay.
But you'll have to look and see if it's the semi-transparent or transparent. I'm not sure what you're after. So,
I'm just looking for a color like a gray or a brown.
Yeah, I think stain. I think that's the only one that I've ever come across that.
Okay.
Doesn't recommend that you strip it.
When you strip it, it involves a lot of work. It really doesn't strip at all. It's kind of spotty. Okay, I'll go check out the Cabot guy up there at Home Depot and read the label and talk to those guys.
All right, sounds good.
Okay. Thank you for your call, James. All right, James is off. Let's talk to Ann. Good morning, Ann. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Well, I'm just fine. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so glad you all are there because I've called you so many times. And so here I am yet again. I know Zeke Acosta isn't there, but I have a feeling you guys are going to know the answer anyway.
Well, let's give it a shot.
I purchased a Goodman HVAC system, a heat pump, a 2-ton Goodman 14.3 SEER2 heat pump system. And I would like to know if it qualifies for the energy tax credit, which is $2,000.
All right. Here's a news flash. I don't know.
Yeah, that's because you're getting into the particulars of it. I mean, we know there's tax credits available, but depending on probably the SEER level, yeah. I would imagine. Right, John?
I think so. There's a couple different resources for energy credits. Like one would be Duke Energy. You may be able to go straight to the Duke Energy site and check it out. I've not been there recently, but usually all that information is archived there. And then the other place you could go is possibly to goodman.com. I would start with the Duke Energy first because that's where there's going to be the link between, you know, the EPA and you know, energy consumption. My fear is, Ann, that it's the 14.2 is like standard. That's a must, I believe. You can't be lower than 14.2. So the energy rebates may come at like 16 or higher SEERs, but I can't recall.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
We appreciate your call. Sorry to disappoint.
That's okay. You've helped me so many other times. You're totally forgiven.
We get a pass. All right. Thank you, Ann.
Thanks,
Ann. Have an awesome day. All right, David, we're going to be, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about this morning, but we're going to be close to a break. So we'll go and do that. You can call us. Coming right out of the blocks hot this morning. That's great. 704-570-1110. Or, that's what we'll do. We'll chat when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Give us a call. We're at 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. We'll talk about what's important to you. David, I've got a big, long list this morning. I guess that's kind of typical. Just the stuff to talk about.
Sure.
Everything from some fire safety questions that came up to what order you should paint and how you should paint a wall. But I thought we'd kick off just with the fire safety stuff real quick because it's kind of important.
Yeah, and we just did it in October too.
So. Yeah, I think that's probably what happens is people kind of hear things and they don't take a note and it's like, well,
sure.
What was that you said?
We're busy, everybody's busy.
The reference was to fire extinguishers and smoke alarms, and like, there's multiple kinds. What's what, and what should I have? You want to start with smoke alarms?
Well, yeah. So, technically, in a house, and I know you went through this when you did a renovation project, and you were forced to bring your house up to code.
Yeah.
Which included what of extinguisher or a smoke alarm in each room.
In each bedroom,
each
yes.
bedroom, and then one in the common hallway outside yep. those bedrooms. So, a lot of times you'll have three bedrooms, maybe upstairs, and then the hallway. So there's three. That's four, and then maybe the master bedrooms downstairs. So then you have to have five, and six, and then there's one out in the general area of the house. So you know, doesn't take long. And if you're having to rewire that, right, like you had yep. to go through, yep. that's because you're cutting drywall out and fishing wire, and then, of course, it has to be patched. And it's never just patch that hole and paint that little area. It's usually an open floor plan. So you're painting the hole downstairs, right?
Yeah, we lucked out in that regard, but for sure it's a challenge. You got to do it.
Right.
I think the question also, or the conversation that comes up is if you go to the store, there's two types of smoke alarms. One is, I think, photo eye or photoelectric, and one is, I forget the sensor, it's like a little radioactive particle in there to the sense. And one sense is particulate in the air, and then one sense is smoke.
Right.
And I think one is good for smoldering fire, one is good for flash fires. The solution really is the manufacturers have come out with a combination version.
Right. Right.
So it does both. And so why try to brains it out standing there on the aisle? Just get the dual solution.
Well, yeah, and also just wanted to add this in there. In most places now you're supposed to have a carbon monoxide detector. Even if you don't have natural gas, if you have a garage attached to your house, they want a carbon monoxide detector. So you can get a combination of that as well.
Yeah.
So usually you put that one on the outside of the bedroom. And then, of course, all of these units are daisy chained together. So what that means is if one goes off, they all go off.
They all go off.
So that way, you know, everyone's alerted in the entire house. They'll say, we forgot to tell David. He'll be all right.
Don't wake David.
Don't wake him up. He's grouchy.
That's terrible. All right, so let's jump over to a second to the fire extinguishers. The most common, I think, are A, B, C, mm-hmm. right? And then there's a D for combustible metals, like if you've got magnesium, more commercial scenario, and then also a K for like large quantities of cooking oil in a restaurant application. I think we can dismiss D and C as a general rule. I'm sorry, D and K as a general rule, right?
Right.
So then I think same deal applies, right? There's an A for wood and cloth, a B for grease and oil, and a C for electrical, or ABC.
There you go.
Get the ABC.
Yes.
Might be more important to talk about where you should place them. What are your opinions?
I mean, I think you always need one in the kitchen, but I think it needs to be placed somewhere in the kitchen where it would be away from the actual potential fire, right? The hot spot, right? So don't put it above the stove. Don't put it underneath the stove. You know, if it's a cabinet, you know, you could put it in a, and I would put it in a cabinet that's maybe a couple of doors away from, away from the stove itself or the oven. And then, of course, if you have a pantry, that's a great place because, you know, let's face it, they're not the greatest for your decor. But at some point you may need it. So put it in the pantry and keep it out of the way. But, you know, you have one.
Yeah, I hung one on the back of the pantry door. So the door closes, it's out of sight. Open it up, it's easy access.
That's it. And then just remember that if you do have a fire, especially if it's electrical or cooking oil, do not use water. Got to use some type of, if you don't have a fire extinguisher, you need a powder, but go get one. I mean, they're not that expensive, and it's worth it. It's worth it, just that peace of mind, I think.
I agree. The okay, so that's it for fire. I hope we answered the question, pardon me, correctly or accurately or satisfactorily. The this next one is, I think, to summarize, it would be like, what's the scenario where you have negative pressure in the house? Somebody says, my house has negative pressure, but I think it's spawned by the fact that they said they always felt like a little bit of an odor of gas or gas fumes from cooking. And then they said, well, somebody told me I have negative pressure on the house. What's negative pressure on the house besides adolescents with a bad attitude?
So really what you'll see, I think the most common thing, John, is the lines around the carpet, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's dark lines. Dark lines at the walls. It's usually exterior walls, and that's where the carpet is acting as a filter, but as the unit runs in the house, so exhaust fans or mainly the returns are sucking that air back to that unit, it's always pulling air from anywhere that it can get, and it's going to take the least path of resistance. So if you have gaps underneath the walls, if it's not sealed, if it's not caulked, it will pull that air. So then it pulls it through. Then you get that dark line on your carpet around the perimeter. You hear them advertising here on the station, the carpet cleaners that say we can get that dark line out. But the cure to that is
not to let it come back.
Yeah. Not to let it come back. So, and of course, you know, there's a little bit involved with that, but you can stop it and you're not bringing that dusty, dirty air in your house.
So. The real issue is there's water or there's air being drug out. You have an imbalance between the warm or the conditioned air in and the air exiting, either as part of the HVAC system, or as you said, you've got a whole house fan could do it,
mm-hmm.
or a very strong
exhaust fan over the stove. Right.
In a stove, or most bath fans aren't going to be good enough to do that.
No, but long periods of time, if you run them, will have an effect. So but when we talk about that, about putting a timer on your exhaust fans in your bathrooms, because most people turn it off, but, you know, we don't want to tell you to do that either. If you turn it off too soon, it doesn't have any value or not much.
Right.
So if you put a timer, you let it run for an hour after a shower, you're more likely to get most of the humidity out. But if you go off and leave it running all day, now every time the heat or the air comes on, it's pulling part of that conditioned air, sucking it out, and just blowing it outside the house.
Yeah.
So it becomes a little bit wasteful at that point. I mean, it's always pulling some conditioned air out, but you don't want to do it, you know, for a ridiculous amount of time.
There you go. So let's say, okay, I don't want to go around and figure out all these HVAC solutions to keep the black ring on my carpet from coming back. What's another option?
Makeup air.
Okay.
Is one option. I mean, with exhaust fans over stoves, once you get over 400 CFM, you have to, that's the code, and you're forced to bring in outside air. So basically it has a switch inside it that when it senses air movement, it opens up a damper from another location, and it pulls air into that room. So you're mixing air. I'm not a huge fan of that. I mean, I understand the principle behind it, but you're bringing in unconditioned air into a house. So if it's in the middle of summer, if it's in the middle of pollen season, whatever, you're drawing that air in the house. So my suggestion to most of my customers is try to keep your fan under 400 CFM, because most of the time you don't need it. You know, you just don't need, well, most people don't need 1200 CFMs, you know.
I don't know. I like the wind in my hair while I cook bacon.
Yeah. Well, maybe that explains that shiny spot.
Yeah. Hey, that's bacon grease. All right. We got to take a break here, and we'll be back for the shiny spot that is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave when we return from these important messages.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Dolville.
Taking calls this morning at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. Before we jump into some additional topics, let's do our Home Depot product of the week. And I'm revved up for spring. David, this one I think will even pass muster with you, but I don't know. We'll see. This week, I want to talk about the Masterbuilt Gravity Series 800 Digital Wi-Fi Charcoal Grill. It is a grill, a griddle, and a smoker. It's charcoal fired, it's gravity fed, so you put like charcoal into it and it gradually feeds the charcoal in. It's got a digital setting so you can maintain from a Wi-Fi solution the temperature. Digital fan keeps the temperature constant. You can do breakfast, lunch, or dinner. It reaches 225 degrees Fahrenheit in 8 minutes, 450 degrees Fahrenheit in 10 minutes, or 700 degrees Fahrenheit in 14 minutes. That's pretty quick. And David, you will be happy to know that this is not John's $2,000 grill. It comes in under $800.
Wow. So,
yeah, that's pretty slick, actually. And I've always been like, I don't know if I want to do the charcoal thing. When you look at this and like what you can do, I don't know. I'm tempted.
I have friends, that's all they cook on is charcoal.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty serious when you really think about it. And the science going into this thing is pretty great. So anyway, so that's it. And of course, there's an app for that. So
right.
It's pretty great.
I wonder, right, does it control the dampers and all of that? It must have some control over it.
It's got to have some control over dampers. But then it also touts a digital fan, so it's probably increasing
airflow
to heat, you know, to cause it to heat up, mm-hmm. and then just keeping it steady, so the fan speed is variable.
So that's better than blowing on it, right?
Depends. It's a lot more fun if you can get out the blower and just, you know, what happened to my siding? All right, 704-570-1110. Let's talk about decks. Freestanding or attached to the house. You don't have to attach a deck to the house just because it's going up next to the house, correct?
Right. Well, I mean, if you're on a slab house, it's
wow, true.
You can't anyway. So, well, I mean, you can, but I don't think it meets code unless it was the bolts were put in through the foundation, and it's solid filled.
Yeah, and there's no point to do that in that scenario. Right, there's absolutely no point in doing that.
So, yeah, so I think sometimes people elect to just go ahead and put footings or cantilever back and set your post out a little bit from the house and then not attach to the house. So, you know, I always think about that when you're attaching that one board and you wonder, how does it just not split all the way across? He's drilling big 5/8 holes through it. Anyway, but you know, most of that's to keep it from moving and pulling away and tipping over, essentially.
Right.
when that started. So, and then we started originally with what, put lag bolts, and then they stopped that, and now you have to through bolt.
Right.
And they want to see the bolts, be able to see the bolts, and there's a pattern that you have to maintain. So it's better. Mecklenburg County is great because they have a little pamphlet if you want to build your own, and it talks all about the footings and the locations, what you're supposed to do, the attachment to the house, the rails, the stairs, the joist, all of those things, and it's pretty quick. I mean, you know, it's not rocket science, but once you study it and read it a little bit, you pretty much understand how they want that deck built.
It's a great resource. I haven't looked recently. The other resource that I really liked, and I think there may have been a small fee attached to getting access to all the information, was, I think it was called The Best Deck Site Ever. And it went through all the different things, species of lumber, what's the deck height, what's the right, how much can you cantilever over the, the beam. If you set it up that way, what size do the footings need to be? That changes if you're going to cantilever something versus right. just straight up. So,
or maybe you're going to put stone or yeah. some type of block or something on top. That changes that all a little bit. But it's important to know. My thing is like you, John, I want to try to do something that's low maintenance, so that you're not having to deal with that all the time. That first call we had this morning, James, you know, that's what he was talking about is, you know, he has a wood deck and that's nice, but he wanted us to put a stain on it that he doesn't have to strip off in 2, 3, 4, or 5 years whenever it fails, especially if it's a solid stain. And, you know, it's good thinking because
it's really good thinking.
It's a lot of work.
So that's it. We can spend hours on that. I don't think we will this morning. If you got questions about decks or deck building, you guys are getting ready to think about, hey, we want to either add to the deck we've got or tear what we got down and redo it. We're happy to, you know, to deal with specific questions. There are a couple more. Let's just go there real quick. One of them was, hey, if I'm replacing my deck boards, so they've got ugly deck boards, how do I know once the boards are up that the joists underneath are okay? And I presume by okay, they mean like not rotted out.
Sure.
That's not a hard process to go through, right?
It's really not. And, you know, it's not. We did one last year, late last year in the fall, and they put composite down, and we ordered the composite, the color that they wanted, and we used a vinyl rail. And I just said, you know, hey, I said, if you're going to do this, I mean, go ahead and change the joist, because some of them were questionable, but mostly they were sagging.
Yeah.
You know, because they had been there long enough that they had started to sag. And I said, you know, you're going to put this nice new deck up here, and the boards were run diagonal. So we had to put the joist 12 inches on center anyway.
Yep.
So let's just go ahead and take them all out, and let's, you know, it seemed wasteful. And they could have been used for something. I mean, we didn't. They ended up going to the landfill. But, you know, it's worth it. It's just worth it. If you're going to spend that kind of money, you might as well make it nice.
I agree. And then that was another question. We're past our break, so let's go ahead and take our break. And then we can talk about some alternatives as far as how you run deck boards and stuff and the implications that has. Folks, it's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave, 704-570-1110. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Dolville.
704-570-1110. That's our number. Give us a call. David, you touched on it real quickly, and I want to spend a minute because it makes a big difference, I was going to say particularly if you're going with a composite decking. But it's really, really cool, and I did it on our deck. I changed the direction of the deck boards multiple times, so they don't run perpendicular to the joists. I have them running at angles, and then I have a straight section, and then I have another kind of complementary mm-hmm. angle. And it looks really good, and it's kind of nice when you have a big, long expanse. It breaks things up a little bit.
It does. And if you do have any undulation in the deck, sags.
Ooh, I know. That sounds exciting.
I know. That's kind of like amber. You mean yellow?
My deck is undulating.
quick. But it helps disguise some of that too. But you're right, if it's a long run, it looks nice.
Yeah,
it gives you a little interest to it.
Yeah, And so the reason we bring that up is that looks awesome, but when you do that, the deck guide that David, to which David referred or to which I referred, will tell you when you run the deck boards at an angle other than 90 degrees, most often you have to drop the distance between those joists from 16 on center to 14 and change or 12 and whatever. It depends on what your angle is. But that you'll find that those guidance, that kind of guidelines information in the actual decking product if you're buying a composite deck. And then you need to refer to, a resource, either local code or just online information if you're just putting like a wooden deck over the top of it. That's wooden deck does not come with instructions like a composite might. Let's talk to Gail. Gail, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you?
You okay?
We're doing well. How are you, Gail?
Good. I have a toilet which has been chronic problem. I don't like it because you have to plunge it very often. Mm-hmm. It's a half bath downstairs just for guests only, but our family uses it every day. What is a simple solution? I'm tired of having to, plunge it.
Sure.
And
yeah.
The germs bother me. I have to clean it every time. What would make a commode, which is a brand new home when it was bought, and it started initially early on, and we've had this going on for years?
Could be a couple things. Do all the other drains in that bathroom, the sink, vanity, do they all drain without a problem?
Yes, the sink does drain without a problem.
Probably just a poor toilet.
I think that would be my guess. Yeah, so when they fire those toilets, it's a porcelain, vitreous china, is probably the correct term. And every once in a while, you'll get like a hairline crack or something will happen where the product will sag inside that trap going out during the firing process. And so it's either constricted or there's a little flaw in it that's causing toilet paper or things to get stuck on that and then just keep clogging. Sometimes it's just a bad trap. My guess is for the cost of a new toilet, that's a quality toilet and comfort height if you want to go to that, I would have a plumber come in and just replace the toilet. That's our guess. As long as everything else is functioning right, there's no other slow drains in the house.
That's what she was saying, was that it kind of started when the house was done.
On day one, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think another brand of toilet is called for here.
All right. That tells me what to do, and we'll do it this week. Thank you so much, guys, and I love your program.
Well, thanks for calling, Gail. We appreciate you. All right. Off to change the throne.
I guess we could have given her some ideas of toilets for other people that are listening, right? I mean, American Standard, the Champion 3 and 4.
Champion 4, I think, is the last one that I had. That thing will flush, I think, a dozen golf balls.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it done.
Yeah. So,
sort of like my golf
game. Right after you quit. Yeah. Well, remember, folks, they're not actually putting those down the sewer. So
that's a good point.
They catch them in a bucket and they keep reusing them over and over again. So it's almost a cutaway, right? So that's a good toilet. The American Standards are a good toilet. Delta makes a good toilet. Mm-hmm. Kohler, this Kohler Cimarron, most all the Kohler toilets are nice.
Hey, I'll tell you what. My investor guys love the Glacier Bay toilet in a box.
I put them in our townhouse after we moved in because we had the same problem. We had toilets that were just not very good toilets and they did not flush well. We switched them out to those Glacier Bay because I knew we were going to be moving. I didn't want to spend a lot of money on toilets. $99 and voila, you can put the plunger away. So
yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah,
and look, invest in two things, in my opinion, as long as there's room. Number one, is comfort height. Number two is an elongated seat.
Agree.
Those are two features.
Agree.
And the caller says too much Charmin. can stop. Please don't squeeze the Charmin. Thank you, caller. Oh my!
Here God. We go. Yeah. Here we go. All the right. Boys will be boys in their potty humor. They'll get us started.
Potty like a rock star.
All right. But yeah, so it's not, you know, it's not a huge deal, and there's plenty of videos out there if you're pretty handy and you think you want to try to change your own toilet out. It's not that hard to do. It's heavy. You know, so couple quick tips, John, I'll just throw these out
yes.
there.
No.
So if you're going to change your toilet, you want to get the water completely out of it because the trap will hold some water and it'll spill, especially if you're...
That's the biggest mistake people make.
Right.
Oh, it's all over my carpet.
So you turn the water off on the valve, and we always suggest that you replace the supply line and pick one of those up if it doesn't come in the box. Most toilets today come with everything but the supply line, right?
Mm-hmm.
So so there's that. Get the water out of the toilet, take it loose. The toilet's much lighter if you separate the tank from the bowl. So mm-hmm. sometimes that's a tough chore if it's been in for a while because it's corroded, but you can get a hacksaw blade in there and cut the bolts off between the tank and the tank and the bowl. And then the same thing if you're bringing it in the house. As I've gotten older, when I swap toilets out for customers, I don't do it very often, but once in a while I do it. I'll open the box on the truck and take the tank out and carry it in. I'll take the lid, carry it in. I'll take the bowl, and I'll carry it in separately.
Yeah.
So it cuts down on the weight. And then put your seal down, follow the directions in the box. It's pretty simple. So not a whole lot to it. You'll be patting yourself on the back when you're done installing it, and you'll be patting yourself on the back when you don't have to plunge it anymore.
And then you can just do the regular patting yourself on the back in comfort.
Right. Yeah. At comfort height.
All right. Never mind. That's all bad. Okay. 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. Great question from Gail. The other thing to think about is, depending on the age of your toilet, remember this is a couple hundred years ago now, it feels like when we went to like a 1.6 gallon flush, there's toilets out there now that will flush on even less than that, like they're 1.1 gallons, and they work really well. So if you're in an area where you have a septic tank, so when you're on septic, there's always two considerations. Number one is how much I don't want to spend a lot to run water unnecessarily that I don't need. And number two, any additional water that you don't need has to go into the septic tank. And so if you can reduce the amount of water into the septic system, that's a good thing.
Sure.
Right. So it's worth investigating those things. It's almost like we talk about, you know, heating and cooling. As the efficiencies step up, there comes a point in time and says, oh, okay, it's now worth maybe doing this. So there could be some water savings in it for you as well. I'm always amazed when I go into hotels, especially like if I'm in like Phoenix or other places like that, and they still have these toilets that flush for 10 minutes. And I'm like, man, I can't believe you haven't thought this through, but anyway, all good. All right, we got a couple minutes left before we hit our here's maybe we could go to this, because this came up, and I think we have enough time to do this, David. There was the question was like, hey, I heard you can have like an auxiliary septic tank for laundry only. Is that practical?
It used to be pretty normal to pump the gray water from the washing machine out into its own field. You know, it was something as simple as a 55 gallon drum. Obviously that's not going to last very long in the ground, but if you used a plastic one and you drill the holes, they put gravel around it, and that's what
it
does. Yeah, well, you know, we talk about that often. It's kind of like a dry well. Yeah. So I don't know how legal it is anymore, so that would be something that you would have to talk to the county about, because each county, each state's different, and that's what you'll find out. And of course, depending on the soil and where you're at, mm-hmm. there's different types of systems, and they're engineered, and they go from a conventional system, which was the norm, to these engineered systems, which require low pressure or pumps or lots of gravel or sand.
I've seen actual septic hills, if you will, where
mound, a mound system. Mound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Not sure Absolutely. I'm a fan, but I guess it works. So,
Yeah.
Can't control it this morning. My mind goes everywhere. 704-570-1110 is our number. Get your questions ready. We're going to sneak away for a break. We'll talk about what's important to you. You can also go to AskJohnAndDave.com. Click on the questions button. Don't forget to do that. And we'll talk more home improvement questions when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. That's the number. Give us a call. We'll talk about the home improvement questions that are important to you. David, we've been going down a long list of stuff. And we were talking about decking right before the break, and we talked about when you put the deck boards at a diagonal, or an angle different other than 90 degrees to the relative to the joists, then some spacing adjustments are likely in order. What about, I'm trying to remember, this is going back. Remember before five quarter board was popular, we always put 2x6 deck boards on top of the deck as, mm-hmm. as the deck surface. Did we run those, did that give us like spacing of like 24 on center? Am I remembering that?
Yeah, you could go 24 on center. I never did, but you could.
It's pretty spongy, I think. Yeah.
Well, and it's not so much when it's new; it's after it dries out and gets older.
You start to get some bellying in there.
Yeah, get a little springboard action.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So nothing really to talk about there, but I think it is important to know that there's options as far as making the deck look less. Less, canned, if you will. I don't know if that's the right terminology. And just give it some pizzazz. But prevent undulation at every opportunity. 704-570-1110. David, I want to refinish a bathtub. I don't want to do it. I've actually done it. I've bit the bullet against all the advice I've ever given over 30 years. And I refinished a fiberglass tub and a fiberglass shower stall. Have you ever messed with that?
Refinishing fiberglass?
Yeah.
I have. I've been involved with a couple of them. Not myself, of course, but hiring out a company to come in and recoat them. Mm-hmm. And it does nice. It looks nice. It wasn't perfect. And I'm not sure if it was the applicator or what, but he spent a lot of time cleaning and prepping.
Yeah, it's wicked stuff.
And that's pretty important, but also I think applying the coating is pretty important. So I think you have to have a little bit of experience doing that. And I'm not so sure this guy had done that many of them, but nonetheless, it looked much better than it did, and the owners were okay with it. And I don't think it was going to come off. It just wasn't as smooth. It was more... I don't know, almost like it was a texture on it when it was done. It was a smooth texture, but it was nonetheless. But you could see it. You could see like the droplets is kind of what it was. So something wasn't done exactly right. But you know, it was cheaper to do that than it was to take that unit completely out and replace it.
I did it for the same reason, and I did the stall because it was a really odd size. It was in a manufactured home, mm-hmm. and it was an odd size. And I'm like, I don't want to tile this. I can't find a reasonably priced replacement. And so I just bit the bullet, and we just cleaned and cleaned and cleaned the surface because it was old and soap film and, you know, 220 grit sandpaper and all that stuff. And did it. There's actually a couple products out there. Homex makes one and Rust-Oleum makes one. I use the Homex version, and I would do it again. I'll tell you what was the most obnoxious was just the fumes are like crazy, right? Yeah. So I used a chemical respirator and stuff. And still, thank after God. A while, I didn't care how it turned out.
Maybe that's the thing.
No, because then you have to inhale things before you can get in the shower every time. So, but it actually turned out pretty good. But it is you gotta move quick, because that stuff cures like almost instantly.
Right, and it would have to, so it doesn't sag.
Exactly.
Right,
and then there's a spray version of it, and I just wouldn't touch that. I just feel like sagging would be such an issue. You could think maybe people who like spray automobiles for a living could pull that off because they know the touch. But I just didn't even want to get near a spray concept, so I took chances with the real fine roller solution that they
sure.
had.
Sure, but I just think
I turned out pretty good.
When you do that, you just have to have everything taken care of that needs to be taken care of. So probably pretty important to understand the directions through and through.
I must have read them like six times before
I started. I would too with something like that, because you don't want to end up with a mess, because you think the soap scum was hard to get off.
Say, why is that roller just hanging there on the side of the wall stuck?
That's a new grab bar.
Yeah. All right, 704-570-1110. That's our number. Give us a call. Here's a question that would be maybe good for you to weigh in on. It's like, do I need an engineer, an architect, or an inspector? Maybe before you tackle. Well, we got Ray has a question on toilet installation or a comment. Let's get Ray. Ray, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Good. I just want to make a comment about the lady that had a problem with her toilet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I've been doing renovations for 25 or 30 years, and I would almost bet that 90% of the toilets that she was talking about, you have to plunge it all the time. It wasn't installed correctly. If it is installed correctly onto the wax ring, mm-hmm. it will work properly. If whoever installed it didn't get it perfectly on the wax ring, instead of having a 4-inch outlet, it's probably 2 inches.
Like 2 or 3, yeah.
And it's not going to flush right. That's mm-hmm. my
could
opinion.
Be.
That's a really good point. So, yeah, Gail, if you're still listening, she's still pulling that toilet off.
Right.
To reset it at least, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would almost say that if whoever pulls the toilet off, they'll see that it wasn't set directly, correctly on the wax ring.
Yeah, that's possible.
Because very rarely, no matter what the brand of toilet, I have never really had a toilet that just because of the toilet, it wouldn't flush right.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them may be more noisy or whatever, but I would almost say that whoever installed her toilet, it was not put correctly onto the wax ring.
Well, and you know, there's probably some truth to that, but I lived in the townhouses for a couple of years, and I can tell you that all of my neighbors all had the same problem. We all had the same toilets, and everybody had the same problems, so...
There are some bad toilets out there, but I think it's good advice. And then let me ask one more question. I know we're sneaking past our break here, but so when you have the wax rings that have the horn on them, I've usually argued that that's not necessarily a benefit, but that does that help it seat more correctly in the center?
It's supposed to, but it just depends on the installation. You know, of the plumbing and, you know, it's easy to not get it correctly on the wax ring. Good. You know, if they get it over to the side, they think it's going on there. And if it's over to the side and it cuts the, you know, the size of the drain down.
Restricts, yeah.
You know, it's usually a problem.
Awesome. All right. Well, Ray, I appreciate the call. Thanks for taking a minute to give us that heads up. We're going to sneak away for our break, 704-570-1110. We'll chat when we return from these messages.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about stuff that's important to you. I was thinking about Ray's comment. Makes complete sense to me. It's just, it begs the question, like, really, when you and I talk about just the kind of the how-to piece of it and using the extra nut honey bolts to make sure you hold that bolt in place, because if you get that set correctly in the flange, if the flange is set correctly and you get the bolts, you know, in the flange and then the toilet on top of it, you seriously reduce the likelihood of a ring set
shifting. Well, I've never had it happen to me, so I put an extra nut on my bolts and hold them in place.
To hold them in place.
Toilet. Yeah. I always put the wax ring on the flange and I set the toilet. I don't put it on the bowl upside down because I always usually set the tank. I put it together and set it all at once because a lot of times there's not enough room to lay down between the tub and the toilet or the vanity and the toilet. And plus I don't want to. So I put it together out in the floor in an area where you can do it and then set it all at once. And I've changed a lot of toilets. You know, I grew up, my mother managed apartments. So that's where I learned to do all that stuff. That was, I've never seen it, never seen a wax ring off center. So I'm not saying it can't happen because I'm sure it can, but I would think mostly if it was too many wax rings. So if you stack two of them together or you get the extra thick, I could see that it could squash and go into the hole, and it could become a problem. That's where I would think that would happen.
And that's not something that wax is like beeswax or whatever. That's not going to just kind of wash away over a period of time.
Oh no, absolutely not.
It'd be unclogged again.
It's a dam. It would create a dam, and it would be a blockage. And there's no doubt about that. I don't see it very often. So.
All right. Well, good information. Let's see. Let's pop that. All right. Here's a question. Do you paint walls from the bottom up or from the top down? I know you wash them from the bottom up, right?
Correct. Yeah, I think otherwise it doesn't matter. But normally I'll cut a whole wall in and then I'll roll it. And then I'll go to the next wall, because you like to keep that wet edge.
Wet edge, yeah,
is the thing. So that's how I've always done it. I used to paint those empty apartments too. So it was, I've done it many different ways, and I found the way that worked best for me, and I went for it. I don't know that there is a wrong way, other than if you cut the whole room in, if you leave a thick edge on the paint and you let it dry, you're going to see it.
You're going to see the
later.
Line
so
between the two.
If you leave a wet edge and you roll into it, you can roll that out and you can make it all look uniform.
Okay. All right. Hey, I jumped past a question that I asked, and when Ray just showed up real quick on our call screen there before the break. The question was, do I need an engineer, an architect, or an inspector? And I don't have a lot of details, but I presume it's in designing a room in addition, some sort of structural change to the home. I don't know. I don't want to diss anybody, but I feel like an architect is a bit more like the design and artistic aspect of it. Please don't interpret that incorrectly, but they will get you, hey, this is kind of what I want it to look like. But at the end of the day, the engineer is the one that's going to say you can do that or not.
Well, and that's what the building inspector, when they get that permit or you go for the permit, that's what they want to see. I mean, you can have an architectural drawing, but for the structural portions of it, they want to see those drawings of how that wall is going to be built. So they want to see an exploded view of that. They want to see an exploded view of the foundation. And then they're going to be looking for that stamp on that plan from the engineer, because once you turn that in, that's how you're going to build it. And that's what they're going to require. And that's what they want, because that shifts all the liability from the building standards department to the engineer. And that's what you have to have. So, yeah. It's almost always better just to have that. And it's kind of like your recipe. If you're doing a, you know, some big dish, you know, you start with the recipe. Well, that's your recipe is what the structural engineer is putting down on what they're putting on paper. So.
Yeah, I think the engineer also is one is they're looking at the entire picture, right? So it's very easy to say, well, look, I'm going to span this. I'm going to take this wall out, this load bearing wall out, and I'm going to tuck a beam up in there to carry the load.
Right.
But the question then becomes, so gravity works all the way forever, right? So find that you took care of the load overhead, but you now moved it to two points left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And now where do those, what load or what is carrying that load beneath?
Right. Yeah.
Right. And I think that has to go down
back
to the
footings,
to a footing.
Yes.
Exactly.
Correct.
And so, so there's some scenarios where you can open up a wall and have to make adjustments to the footings beneath.
Absolutely. And or enlarge them, add them, whatever may need to be the case. And now, so that we don't push people's thoughts that you don't need an architect. That's not true either, because
correct,
there are times that you need to bring an architect in to design something, to draw it so that they can tell you what it looks like, and the engineer is the guy underneath that makes sure that the bones are strong enough to hold that pretty picture up. So
exactly, because the architect is the one that's going to say, all right, if you need these features, this space, mm-hmm, this type of design, this floor plan, then this is what it needs to look
right
like. And then the engineer says, yes, there's stuff in nature that can be, you know, assembled and spaced.
Right.
To support that.
Well, the architect's going to tell you that, you know, if you use this shower and you put this toilet here, then you have to have this toilet needs to be put in a certain position in order to meet the code, so that, you know, that it's far enough away from the vanity and it's far enough away from the bathroom, the shower wall or the tub wall. So there's a lot of things that they do. But if you're just taking a wall out, like you said, John, what you were talking about, you don't really need an architect for that. You do need an engineer
though. Yeah.
You can draw that out yourself if you can draw a sketch of the room, and then the engineer, you give that to the engineer. But normally he's going to come and visit
the
job site, and that's good. But if they have a set of plans, they can work off of that set of architectural plans, and unless they're needed on the job site, they don't usually show up. So,
okay. All right, so that's good advice, and I think it opens up possibilities for all kinds of innovation in an existing home. And we've gone back and forth now after COVID. You know, we went from having big wide open spaces. People are back saying, "Well, I might have you know, a small room here for a study, or a room here for the kids to play in, or something like that." So all those options become possible and safe when you have a chance to vet them with the architect. Do we have time for Clyde with Squeaky Floors? Clyde, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Hey, good morning, guys. Real quickly, you gave me the name of a company one time. I've got some squeaky floors in the kitchen, and you went over that with me, and you gave me the name of this guy, and I swear I lost it. Could you tell me that again?
Mm-hmm. A person?
I'm not sure when or who it was. How long ago was it?
It's probably been a year or so ago. That would come in and look at them and, you know, maybe refasten them to the bottom or renail them. Or
oh, something. To the joist. Are you replacing your flooring or is it hardwood floors?
They're hardwood.
Oh, yeah. So you really need someone to go underneath. What you need is a handyman.
Yep, hey, hang tight for 1 second, Clyde. We'll make sure we square that up off the air. We're just up against a hard stop here. Folks, it's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. 704-570-1110 is the number. Give us a call and we'll talk about your home improvement questions when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Let's do our Home Depot product of the week. This one is, I like it. It's manufactured by Masterbuilt. It's a Gravity Series 800 digital Wi-Fi charcoal grill. So it's a grill, it's a griddle, it's a smoker. It's self-feeding charcoal, digitally and Wi-Fi enabled, so you can maintain a steady temperature for grilling, a steady temperature for smoking. Although you're probably not smoking with charcoal, you would want something, but you can use a little, the wood chip boxes and stuff like that. This thing it reaches 225 degrees Fahrenheit in 8 minutes, 450 in 10 minutes, and 714 minutes. That's always been my beef with charcoal. So like it takes a while to get it where you want it. And then it's hard to maintain an exact temperature. You're moving stuff around on the grill. This one has a digital control panel. So you actually set the desired temperature and it will hold it using a digital fan, picking up the speed and dropping the speed. It's got a temperature gauge and probe, so you can actually get feedback from the food itself back into that digital control. So pretty slick. You can do breakfast, lunch, or dinner on this grill, or you can do all three if you want. If you want to just get outside for the day, literally the day, boom, there you go. David, it passes muster with the Doval, hey, don't be ridiculous, John meter. Under $800. So
it's a mouthful.
Really want it, yeah, it's hard to say. So that's why. But here, I'll do it simply. Masterbuilt Series 800 Digital Wi-Fi Charcoal Grill. Check it out. All right. That's that bit of information. Let's go back. I forget where we were. We talked about the architect versus engineer versus mm-hmm. inspector. If you have an architect and an engineer, things will typically go better with the inspector. All right. So here's one, David, pretty simple. Cleaning vinyl siding. How do you do it? There's a couple things. You can get good cleaners, pressure washers, and so on. But there's a couple questions for cleaning vinyl siding that we like to share.
Right.
Right.
Well, and you talked about earlier about starting at the bottom and working your way up.
Right.
So, and that's always a good thing because as you're rinsing, the rinse water's continually running down, so you don't get streaked. So you get the dirt off of the bottom and work your way up to the top. Using a hose or a pressure washer, you can put a hose end adapter on there that brings it down to a tight stream. They call them tunnel nozzles.
Right.
And they're
right.
I keep them. I have them by all my hoses. I love them. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Don't spray up into the lap
loopholes.
Of the siding. Right.
Right.
Try to keep it straight on or down. And if you use a pressure washer, it's kind of the same thing. I have a long wand that I bent. So it's kind of like like a J hook. So we just bent it. And once you get up in the air, we switch to that wand. And that worked pretty well to make sure that you were washing down. We almost always use a car wash brush. Probably not as important with vinyl unless it's just really, really dirty. As it is for a painted surface. So if you're prepping a surface for painting, we almost always used to agitate with a brush to clean because you want to make sure that you have no bond breakers, that's completely clean, so that your paint has a better opportunity to hold and stick to the surface for a longer time.
There you go. So. There you go. Let's talk to Luther. Luther, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Yes, good morning. I would like to know what is the cost range to replace a toilet wax seal?
I don't know exactly, but I think you're probably in the $200 range, most likely. Yeah, for a plumber to come out or a handyman to come out to do a service call. You're going to be somewhere in that area.
All right. Appreciate the information. Thank you, sir.
Uh-huh. Thank you for the call, Luther.
All right.
It's a good question. The other question that raises is if you're bringing somebody out to reset a wax ring and your toilet is, not a comfort height or not elongated, for $200, spend another $100.
Well, you
to
get
$200.
A toilet seat. You get everything. Like I said, yeah. Everything's in the box, so it's new for $200. So for $400, you're setting pretty.
Yeah.
Get it?
I see what you did there. Pretty potty. Yeah. All right. Comfort. It's all about comfort. I don't know. 704-570-1110. Does it matter if I paint the trim first or the walls first? No. I always paint the walls before the trim, though.
I do, too.
I don't know why.
Really, because if you're rolling, and you have baseboard, then there's probably a little spray from the roller.
Yeah.
So it's getting on top of the baseboard. So then you paint it last. I just think it's easier to cut it in. And then a little trick that I was taught years ago was that, especially if you're using a white trim paint, is that you can come back and instead of totally cutting that in along your paint color on the wall, you just run a thin bead of caulk right there, and it straightens that line right up. If you can use a caulk gun, it's awesome. But if you can't use a caulk gun,
you might want to get a bigger mess than yourself.
Yeah. So, but that's cutting the tip small and knowing
real how to small
move,
exactly
to move it and to keep it going. That's the trick, is to keep moving. So, I taught my grandson how to caulk, and it was great because he was so low to the ground when I taught him that he could walk and caulk
walk
the
and
top,
caulk
and walk and caulk the top of the baseboard. And I was like, wow, I wish I could do that.
That's a backache. I just get a backache thinking about that.
Me too.
All right, we're going to take a break. I think it's our last break of the set here, the show, actually. So get your questions ready. Last-minute questions. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We'll talk when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. That's the number. We've got some folks here. Let's just jump on it. Roland, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
I got a question on the Glacier Bay toilets.
Yes.
Where do you get parts for that shutoff valve mechanism?
And the one inside the tank or the one at the wall?
Yeah, the one inside the tank. It's, you know, that's a different situation from a normal toilet. Yes. They got, like mine now, is about 10 years old. And I'll tell you, it's been great. I haven't had one problem with it. But before I generally try to plan ahead, before I have a problem, I was at the Home Depot, and I noticed that they didn't have any kind of replacement, I don't believe, for that shutoff valve. You know, it's got a bath tank up there.
Yeah.
And when you flush it, it just turns the bathtub over. And then, of course, it's got a shutoff valve when it gets fill back up again. It's
right.
A wonderful design.
I want to tell you that it's actually a Fluid Master design, but I'm not 100% sure.
Fluid Master.
I think the guts are manufactured by Fluid Master, and so you can get. Now, there's different types of Fluid Master. There's the ones that we've always seen on a stock and so on. But I've got a couple different manufacturers. I think I've got a Kohler toilet that uses a much different, it's Fluid Master, but it's a much different design. It's much broader at the base and so on, and it raises up and down versus on a lever. David, do you know?
Well, I'm looking it up right now, so.
I know it's got to be 10 years old, and at least. And I thought, man, this is good design, because I mean, you've got your water reserves. Looks like a bathtub.
No, I know I totally get it. I just don't know the manufacturer of it, Roland. Tell you what, hang tight for a second. We'll put you on hold. We'll get Russ, and then we'll see if we can. That'll give David a minute to see if we can find that thing online. If not, we'll get your number, and I'll find out from the manufacturer what the model is. Russ, thanks for waiting. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you?
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, cool.
my exhaust on my gas furnace on top of the roof, it's like the majority of it looks like white, like plexi,
PVC
plumbing.
Yeah. Yes.
Tube. You know, yes. It's not metal.
Correct.
And it looks like it has been spray painted or sealed at one time.
Yes.
And I think it needs it again because occasionally the white pipe going down into the furnace closet will just drip occasionally. So I'm thinking up top it needs sealed.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, is there a special type of spray paint?
No.
Or something I have to brush on it? And it doesn't need to be specific for that.
No, it's not the paint. It's not the paint at all, Russ. It's painted so it just looks better. When it's up against the shingles, if there's a leak on it, there's a neoprene boot that slips down over that pipe that keeps the water from getting, you know, from leaking around the pipe. Over a period of time, those boots deteriorate in the ultraviolet rays of the sun. And so you can go to Home Depot will sell a replacement flange for that. It's back with all the roofing products. And so you just got it. It's probably, a 3-inch pipe. It could be smaller coming out of the roof.
The diameter's not real.
Yeah, it could be a 2-inch.
Could be 2-inch pipe.
It depends on the length of the run.
I think it is more like a 2-inch pipe, and the very top of it kind of like bends over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're going to have to do a little bit of work because I don't know that flange is going to fit over the gooseneck.
May not be glued.
Return on, but it just like slide it off, drop the new flange piece over the vertical pipe, and then slide your 45 and or 90 back on.
Now there is two like different size of the tubing, like when they've connected it, it's like one size and then another size. So that's why I was thinking maybe the seal was broke. But I understand what you're talking about. Same concept as your vents.
Exactly.
Your plumbing vent, correct.
Exactly. Right. Same exact thing, Russ. But you're 100% right.
But as far as the paint to make it look kind of better, because you can see the white coming through.
Yes. Yes.
Is there
just
a
black spray
paint that has to?
No.
Does it have to be temperature?
No.
No. Well, I mean, if you could get high temperature paint, it maybe will hold up better up there.
Right. I would say get a primer on there, like a gripper or something like that, and then paint it just because that's going to give you a little bit better bond. And you could also take some sandpaper, some like 220 grit sandpaper up there and kind of sand it off and rough it up a little bit, and
rough
then respray paint it. You'll get a little bit better bond that way as well.
Right.
Cool.
And you do,
cool.
And you did, and I was, we were getting Roland's number, so we were taking care of that. But did you say that he can just buy the donut seal?
I think so.
You don't have to buy the whole flange.
Correct. But he may have to do that online. That's the part that I'm not sure of.
They sell them. They have them at Home Depot, and they're repair flanges or repair rubbers.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood it. When I thought you were talking Roland, I thought you flipped back to Roland for a second. No.
So is the donut seal the same as that flange thing you were talking
about? It's just a part of the flange.
Right. That's the top.
Okay.
That's the part that wears out is the neoprene rubber. That just all you're going to do is just pull that. It looks like a donut. And you're just gonna stretch that, pull it over the pipe, pull it down over the old neoprene. That's gonna seal it, and then you're gonna be fine. You're gonna be right back together.
Okay.
You may not even have to remove the 90 that's on there or the configuration that's turning it down.
Do I need to take the old donut off?
No. That's the beauty of these retrofit.
Oh, all right.
Is that you don't have to mess with the roof.
So,
or anything.
What, is that what they're called? Is that what I'm going to look for? Donuts?
They'll be right beside the pipe flanges for the roof. It'll be in the roofing aisle at Home Depot.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, guys, I appreciate it. Listen every Saturday.
Thanks, Russ. We appreciate you listening, and thanks for a great question. Joe, you're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you?
Hola. So I have a walk-in tub that has several issues. Do you want them all at once, or do you want them one at a time?
Do you want your answers all at once, or do you want them one at a time?
One at a time.
All right, let's
Good
go.
Question. Okay, so number one, I have a faucet that is coming loose, the spout.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can take off the panel, but I can't reach it to tighten it.
So when you say spout, it's the part that fills the tub?
Righto.
Okay. And then how are you taking that unit? How are you taking that piece off? Is there like a little set screw underneath? You're just pulling it away,
yeah,
and now you got the pipe?
There's not. There's not a set screw.
Oh, so you just – so that's probably
– I got to take the panel off on the side of the tub and try to reach that spout, and I cannot.
Are you talking about a fill – you're talking about a garden tub filler?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so it doesn't – it's not on the wall.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you
nope. –
yes, it's tough.
yep.
You have to almost be Gumby to get in there to work on this.
Which
so
I'm
that
not. And I'm not pokey, so
– right, so you have to – you need someone with long arms that's going to be able to reach in there to be able to tighten that up. There's really no other answer than that. Is you have to find the right person that can get in there. Otherwise you have to modify the panel, and which is people do all the time, and they'll
an access panel from a back wall if you can get it from another wall, right?
Yeah, it's probably on the front where the faucets
right.
are.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, unfortunately, you may end up having to cut that panel off and then tile, make another type of panel to go on there.
Okay, next question. The caulk around the top, so if you picture the tub, one side is against the wall and there's mm-hmm. a marble ledge, if you will, mm-hmm. under the window, and then there's caulk around the tub and the ledge, between mm-hmm. the ledge and the tub.
Mm-hmm.
That caulk is settling and cracking. So my husband has been trying to fill it, and I told him because it kept sinking. I said, okay, well, the ground is sinking underneath. So what you're going to have to do, honey, is get in the tub, fill it, then caulk it, but it's still doing it. So
yeah.
My guess is he's going to have to use some kind of flexible caulk.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. He's got it.
Is that correct?
Yeah, something that's going to stay resilient. There's latex versions that'll cure resilient, and there's also polyurethane versions. We're kind of fond of the polyurethane versions, but if you're but just for easy cleanup, using the latex version would be the best. And you can get clear or white, sometimes different colors. If it's sinking back in there, David, I don't know if she needs a backer rod or not. It doesn't seem like that would be the case, but you need something that's going to stay resilient once the tub is or once it's cured. One of our tricks, Joe, is to fill up the tub with water so that there's downward pressure on it, caulk it, and then let the caulk cure, empty the tub. Now as the tub springs back into place, it compresses the bead of caulk versus stretching it when you add water. And that could add to the longevity of your cure.
Okay, so get out of the tub while there's still water, and how long does it take to cure?
Well,
24 hours.
Yeah. Hey, hang on a second, Joe. And John, we see you out there. We're gonna be really close to wrapping this up here. So we're going to go ahead and slip away. Folks, thanks for being with us this week. Great questions. Love it when you call. Each week we wrap up with what we think is the most important kind of home improvement. And we think that that's what makes your home a happier place to live in. Don't forget to work on that project this week. And we'll see you next week when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.